heavy black flies landed on us to check if we were edible.
"What you want?"
a voice shouted from inside. "We bring gifts," Milo replied.
"I didn't order no free Bible off of the TV, so get,"
the voice replied. "We are here to speak with the Elf Queen." It was quiet except for the sound of a professional wrestling match blaring on the TV. Trip looked hopeful. Holly adjusted her pistol under her shirt. She still wasn't used to packing heat, and she kept touching it nervously. Finally, the owner of the voice appeared in the doorway. He was tall and very skinny, wearing a stained wife-beater tank top and a puffy trucker hat. His blonde hair was long and stringy. His fingertips were stained yellow from nicotine, and his teeth were crooked when he smiled. His features were fine, and sharply pointed ears stuck out from under his mullet.
"Well, if it ain't some hunters come to see the queen, well, she be busy, so get for I sick the dogs on you."
He pointed at the fat dog on the couch. It regarded us sullenly, but must have decided that it was too hot to growl. "We have brought gifts," Milo said casually. He opened the back of the little station wagon. The trailer park elf regarded us with suspicion in his beady blue eyes before he stepped off the porch and looked at our purchases from the Piggly Wiggly. He whistled when he saw the contents. Milo had bought several cases of Budweiser and 10 cartons of Marlboro Lights.
"I's go get her. See if she wants to speak at you."
He grabbed a carton of cigarettes, stuffed it under his tank top, and headed for the trailer. We could hear him yelling from the yard.
"Rondell, you's got company!"
Tripp's face had fallen a bit, but he still looked hopeful.
"It's all just a trick to keep away outsiders," he assured himself.
"Dude, he looks like Kid Rock with Mr. Spock ears," Holly whispered. "He sure ain't no Orlando Bloom."
The elf returned. He was unnaturally graceful and long-limbed, but other than that and the ears, he made a convincing redneck.
"The queen will be out in a sec. Y'all have a seat," he said,
pointing at the couch. The dog didn't move. It had gone back to sleep.
"Get off of there! We's got guests!"
He kicked the dog with his bare foot. It woke up, stood, and urinated all over the cushion. He kicked it again, and it scurried off of the porch, tail between its legs.
"Sorry about that,"
he said as he flipped the couch cushion over so we could sit on the dry side. Milo gestured for us to sit. I reluctantly sat on the old couch so as not to offend the elves, but leaned forward as much as possible to keep a minimal amount of contact between my pants and who knows what. Trip, who was a mild germaphobe, did not look so good.
"I think I'll guard the car," Holly stated.
Milo shook his head sternly, and after a moment's hesitation, she sat next to me. Our elf host excused himself and went back into the double wide. Milo, being the experienced and wise hunter that he was, sat on the steps. He sneezed violently.
"Well, this is a little different from what I expected," I said cheerfully.
"It's got to be a diversion,"
Trip whispered.
"The elf keeps staring at my chest," Holly said coldly.
A few humid minutes passed. A bright electric bug zapper noisily executed some mystery critters. I noticed a few sets of eyes checking us out through cracks in various trailers' mini-blinds. Our host returned. He passed by us, crunched across the gravel in his dirty bare feet, opened the back of the escort, and started unloading beer and cigarettes. He grabbed a few cases and took them into the house.
"Queen Ilrondelia will be out in a sec. Y'all want a beer?"
That was a mighty generous offer, considering that we had just paid for it.
No thanks, said Milo.
The rest of us followed the experienced hunter's lead and turned him down as well. Trip really looked like he could use one, though. I think the ugly truth was just sinking in. Kind of like when you are young, and you eventually learn that your heroes are only human. Only I imagine that this was probably a whole lot worse. The Elf Queen appeared in the doorway. Perhaps filled the doorway would be a better description. She was probably pretty close to me in weight, but about 2 feet shorter. She was wearing a flaming red muumuu and white bunny slippers. Her arms dangled fat rolls, and I stopped counting chins at number 5. Her blonde hair was up in curlers, and her blue eyes were beady between layers of lard. Other than the pointy ears, there was not much magical here. She was a definite candidate for gastric bypass surgery.
"Presenting Queen Ilrondelia, ruler of the elves of the Enchanted Forest, mistress of all she surveys. Y'all have a good'un."
He popped a Budweiser and went back into the trailer to watch wrestling. The queen waddled over to her lazy boy recliner slash throne and flopped into it with a satisfied grunt.
"Your Majesty, we have come to ask for your wisdom. We seek knowledge," Milo told her.
"I don't do spells no more. I'm on disability. I done hurt my back. Get me a check from the government, says I can't do spells no more,"
she said in a very plump and semi-literate voice.
"Well, Your Majesty, that's fine. We aren't looking for any spells. We're looking for some information. Elves are long-lived and wise, and you passed down the wisdom of your forefathers."
"Yep. I'll be 150 in August."
I did a double take at that. She looked to be in her 40s. Milo did not seem to question it.
"So, Your Majesty, since elves are so much more in touch with the spirit of the earth, we need to know if you have sensed a new evil in this land."
"There'll be plenty of evil in this land, Hunter. Y'all know that."
She smiled in satisfaction as the bug zapper electrocuted something particularly large.
"Yes, but something landed on the coast in the last few days."
"Oh, him? Yep. Felt it clear to the Enchanted Forest. He's a bad un, aight. I figured he was why y'all came to call."
"Do you know who he is?" Milo asked excitedly.
"Nope. But he's been here before. Back before he got himself cursed and was just a man. Came here before the first elves settled in these parts. Back when we all lived in Europe. He was some high and mighty type general or something. We cut a deal with the old ones down in what y'all call Brazil nowadays. Got himself cursed for it real good."
"How long have elves been on this continent, Your Majesty?" Trip asked.
"Oh, my grammy brought our people over 400, maybe 500 years ago. Back in them days, the Enchanted Forest was a heck lot finer place."
Her jowly face broke into a wide smile.
"I bet," Holly muttered under her breath. "What kind of deal did he make with the old ones, Your Majesty?" Milo queried.
"I don't rightly know. You know how the old ones is. Everything black and dark and scary evil-like. It was something to do with messing with time. No mortal man can mess with time, but he wanted to turn it backwards. He lost his love, and he wanted to make it right."
"His love?"
"I ain't been knowing the story, just what I gets from my cousins over in Europe. But they don't ever call no more. This noble's wife or lady friend got herself killed. He went too damn far trying to get her back. About all I know."
"Do you know where he is now?"
Milo asked. She shrugged her meaty shoulders.
Her muumuu had ranch dressing stains on it. Can you sense where he is now?
No, but I reckon right now he's near water. Can't say why I know, but I know.
Fat lot of good that did us. You couldn't swing a dead cat in the south without hitting a body of water. Do you know about an artifact that can kill time?
Lots of artifacts out there, I reckon. I'd have to see it to tell y'all.
Do you know about a place of power nearby? I asked.
Boy, don't y'all go messing with that. Humans ain't equipped to deal with that stuff.
He's looking for a place of power.
They are all over the place, especially in this land. Can't go no place without being someplace right powerful. Good thing they ain't active most of the time. Only sometimes when the sun or the moon or the stars is just in the right spot, and that only happens so many times in a life, and I ain't talking about no short little human life. Stuff gots to line up just right to have a place of power.
Do you know where the next one is going to be? Another shrug.
Y'all about done. Wheel of Fortune comes on in a minute.
Well, that is what we came for, Your Majesty. Thank you for your time, Milo said. Suddenly, there was a horrible, high-pitched screech. I jumped, startled off of the urine couch. Something the size of a bird was stuck in the bug zapper. Blue flashes and sparks fell to the porch as the device swung wildly from its chain. The elf queen took off one of her bunny slippers and hurled it against the zapper. The slipper hit true, and what appeared to be a tiny human with butterfly wings buzzed hurriedly away.
"Damn pixies! Stay off of my porch!"
the elf queen shouted as she shook her blubbery fist in the air. Milo gingerly picked up the slipper and handed it back.
"Y'all be careful. I don't know what's coming, but I can feel it. Something big is coming. If it ain't stopped, then I figure we all done in."
She put her slipper back on and leveraged herself to her feet. She lumbered into the double wide while we excused ourselves and stepped off of the porch. She stopped in the doorway, turned, and shouted.
"Which one of y'all is the dreamer?"
Milo nudged me to respond.
"I guess I am, ma'am."
"You seen the tattoo, man? The one with the ink?"
"Yes, ma'am. I have."
That was a surprise. I had just thought that was a normal dream.
"Even you see him for real, run. He ain't nothing but the spirit of hurt and revenge."
"What do you know about him? Who is he?"
"I don't know, but I seen him in my dreams, too. Y'all run. Run as fast as y'all can go. He ain't on nobody's side, not good, not evil."
She started to waddle away, but then thought better of it.
"Dreamer, one last thing. Y'all got a mission. Don't screw up, or we all get dead. This here is serious, and I ain't just funning you."
She regarded me solemnly.
"As queen of the enchanted forest, I order y'all not to fail. Kill the bad'un, or it's all over."
"What's all over?" I asked.
"Everything. Now get. Wheel of Fortune is on."
She turned away and the red muumuu swished. An argument started up immediately between the residents of the double wide over game shows versus WWF. "Let's get the hell out of this hole," Holly said. We all agreed. Trip almost looked like he could cry. We drove back into town to grab some lunch and call in our findings to headquarters. We stopped at a subway in Corinth. It felt good to be back in civilization. People were friendly, the cars weren't on jacks,
and I was relatively certain that nothing had urinated on my seat. Trip had not spoken since leaving the Enchanted Forest. We ordered our sandwiches and sat in a corner booth. Milo stepped outside for a little privacy while he called headquarters.
"That really sucked,"
Trip finally said around a mouthful of food. Holly was serious for once.
"I really am sorry. Forget about the nerd teasing. It's tough when your illusions get shattered. I know about that. Trust me, I do. But you will feel better. It's just that I got my hopes up. You have to understand, I loved my life. I loved teaching kids. When it all went to hell, I just couldn't go back. Once I found out what ugliness was out there, the magic was gone. Everything became bleak. So when I got the chance to fight evil, I took it. Plus, don't get me wrong, the massive pay raise helped too. I'm not fighting evil for free or anything naive like that. But come on now, with so much secret evil in the world, I thought for just a minute that there might be a secret good. I just got really excited. Maybe the magic was still out there, you know?"
I nodded. Personally, I was still trying to wrap my brain around the fact that I had just seen a pixie and was apparently having visions. I looked at the mushrooms on my sandwich suspiciously.
"I'm sure there is a greater good out there that offsets the evil, Trip. You will find it someday, so just don't give up hope. You have seen the dark, but for every dark thing there is light,"
Holly said, and patted him on the back of the hand. That was possibly the kindest and most upbeat thing that I had ever heard out of Holly Newcastle. Of course, she immediately followed it with,
"But if I have to deal with another stupid elf and their mystic crap, I swear I'm going to shoot all of them in their stupid inbred hick faces and burn their stupid trailer park down."
Milo came back and slid into the booth. He tore into his sandwich with a vengeance.
"Don't let me forget to pick up a sub for Skippy, too. He loves tuna salad," he mumbled with his mouth full.
"Milo, I've got to ask, why did Harbinger and the Shacklefords freak out so bad in the meeting this morning?" I asked. He hesitated.
"I probably shouldn't answer that. It's Earl's job to tell the story about 95. I'm just a gadget guy. It's a touchy subject, is all. What with all the death and the unimaginable horror and rifts in the very fabric of reality and whatnot."
Now I was really curious. "Come on, Milo. You're way more than just the gadget guy."
"True. I'm the guy that takes care of all the little things. Hey, Milo, we need to make debt cord pretzels. Hey, Milo, where can we find 1,000 gallons of holy water at 2 a.m? Hey, Milo, hurry up and build some new device that we need right now out of old junk A-team style. Hey, Milo, cast out these evil spirits." That kind of thing. But when it comes to a good suggestion, "No, Milo, we won't go with your idea because we're sensitive."
"Everybody takes advantage of you," I said.
"Ha! Nice try. I'm still not talking. You want to know about the Shackelford family and what happened at the Christmas party? You got to talk to Earl. He saved my life when I was only 15 years old. I've been with them ever since."
He chewed his food for another minute.
"You really rebuke evil spirits?" Trip asked. "Cast them out like in the Bible?"
"Sort of. Hey, I'm a Mormon. Every team has to have at least one person with a little faith. Not all problems can be solved by shooting the heck out of them. Well, most problems can. If not, then high explosives can really be your friend. But every now and then you just need to put your faith against the bad guys. For most hunters, that's a losing proposition. So that's why company policy is that if it don't have a physical body, take it up with the religious authority of your choice. Sometimes we don't get a choice in the matter, though."
He slurped noisily from his straw.
"Look, guys, back to the subject. I grew up in Idaho, the youngest of 14 kids, so family's important to me. When most of them got eaten, MHI became my family. And I'm loyal, so if Earl doesn't want me to tell you about 95, then I'm not going to do it."
"Fair enough," I said.
We all went back to our food and studiously avoided talking. Milo appeared to sink into his beard, deep into thought, chewing contemplatively. After a few minutes of actual relaxation, Milo signaled that it was time to move out. We refilled our drinks and prepared ourselves to move back out into the stifling heat. Our group got a few looks from the locals, saying that we obviously weren't from around them parts. I picked up a sandwich for Skippy and another foot-long meatball for myself. The senior hunter waited for the other two to walk out the door before catching my arm. Owen. He looked to make sure nobody was listening. I know you like Julie, and that's why you're so intent on finding out what happened to her family. He pulled off his little round glasses and wiped them on his horribly ugly shirt. No, it's not that at all. I lied. Whatever. I didn't fall off the potato truck yesterday. Look, all I'm saying is that if stuff heats up and this cursed one turns out to be as bad as my gut tells me he's going to be, I'll fill you in on the details, provided you do me a couple of favors.
And those would be?
Help me talk Julie into speaking with her dad. He might be the only person in the world who knows what's really going on. I don't want to go behind Earl's back, but this might be the only way. She might listen to you.
Really? Why would she listen to me? Did she tell you she liked me?
My hope spiked temporarily. Milo quickly brought me back down. No, but she thinks you have visions.
I'm not going to lie to her.
I don't want you to, but if the choice comes down to having the world blow up or having a painful Shackelford family reunion, personally I would rather have the reunion.
Why don't we just go speak to him ourselves?
He's real particular who he talks with, Milo whispered. Holly sounded the horn. She actually held it down for a full 10 seconds. Just stop by my workshop tonight and we'll talk then. And I've got a piece of hardware I want you to try out. I think it might actually suit your personality.
Little green bookkeeper visor that clamps to my helmet?
Nah, full-auto magazine-fed 12-gauge shotgun.
My earlier hunch had been correct. Milo Anderson was a mad genius. The drive back to Boonville and the return flight to the compound were uneventful. The rest of the hunters were busy reading through old books or making phone calls. I helped give a short debriefing about the information we received from the Elf Queen. At the end of the little meeting, I was taken to task for not telling the others about the tattooed man from the dreams.
You should have said something. We could have been researching him, too. Who knows what clues that might have turned up?
Julie snapped at me. She was tired and discouraged from a long day of research. I couldn't really blame her.
Sorry, I didn't know. I thought they were just normal dreams.
Yes, but your dreams are somehow tied to this case. I don't know how, but until we figure it out, you need to report every single dream you have.
She pushed away from the table and stood to leave.
I'll go see if I can find any records matching the tattooed man's description. If you will excuse me, I've got 100 years of dusty garbage to read.
After she stormed off, Harbinger assigned me to go to the range and help coach the remaining newbies with their pistol shooting. At least there was one thing that I was good at. I stopped by the armory and picked up another pistol on the way. I needed to replace my poor broken Kimber. Stupid vampire. There was an absurd number of weapons to choose from. The armory was actually a concrete bunker with a bomb-proof door filled from floor to ceiling with weapons. I could spend hours in that room fondling and drooling over the various guns. There was a wall dedicated to just 45 caliber handguns, Colt, Springfield, Kimber, H&K, CZ, SIG, S&W, Beretta, and other lesser-known brands. I picked out a lightly customized CZ-97B. I was always a sucker for a big 45. 10 rounds in the mag, plus one in the chamber. I could carry it cocked and locked. It would not be in the armory if it had not passed the reliability test with our ammo. I took the CZ, and inside the waistband holster, and several extra magazines. Dorcas would make sure that it came out of my check. That evening I stopped by Milo's workshop. It was a corrugated steel building located behind the main office. All manner of tools and gadgets were hung on the walls. Drill presses, welders, machine tools, and work tables filled almost every square foot of the large space, leaving only narrow foot trails to navigate through the mess. A large American flag was taped up on the far wall. Huge speakers mounted in the corners were playing Oingo Boingo. Sparks flew as Milo used a grinder on some sort of massive device that appeared to be a harpoon launcher. He lifted his plastic face shield when he saw me coming.
"Owen, what's up, my man?"
He bobbed his head to only a lad.
"Milo, what the hell is that thing?"
"Harpoon launcher?"
"What for?"
"In case we need to harpoon something."
I nodded slowly. I think even by the bizarre standards of monster hunters, there were still a few of us who marched to the beat of a slightly different drummer. In another corner there was a stuffed head mounted on the wall. It looked kind of like an alligator, but it had antlers. I did not dare ask if it was real.
"Check this thing out. We can still hit the range while there is a little bit of light left."
He led me to a workbench where a strange-looking gun was mounted in a vise.
"Saiga?"
I asked. That was a Russian shotgun that was based upon the action of an AK.
"At first, on this one I mounted an adjustable ACE stock, with recoil pad, of course, FAL pistol grip, holographic sight system, EOTech in particular, night vision compatible, full rail system, so you can mount lights or IR illuminators, or, as you can see here, a Tula 6G15 40mm grenade launcher, front-loading, single shot. The barrel has been cut down to 12 inches, modified choke, gave it the Vang Comp treatment also so the patterns are good and tight and recoil is softer. I modified the trigger group so top position is safe, middle is full, bottom is semi. I've got the gas adjusted so you were looking at about 700 RPM on full."
He was speaking my language.
"Don't these only come with 5-shot magazines?"
"I've got a bunch of 9-round box mags and 2 20-round drums. I've tested them all. All are reliable. But on full you can run through the 9-rounder in a second, so use it sparingly. Go ahead, check it out."
I gently picked up the massive weapon. It was short, but it was thick and heavy, and that was while it was empty. Add almost a box of shells and a grenade, and it would be even more so. I worked the action. The bolt was slick, and the spring was powerful. Milo had thoughtfully added a shelf to the safety so that it could be operated with the trigger finger. It pointed better than it looked when I snapped it into position.
"What about specialty munitions?"
"There's a gas regulator at the end of the handguard. I machined a new one so that it now has 3 positions. If you have the regulator in the right spot for the right ammo, it isn't going to malfunction."
I ran my finger along the regulator and found detents for the different power levels. There was also a mystery button. When I pushed it, a hinge unlocked, and an 8-inch heavy-duty bayonet was released. The blade was absurdly sharp and thick. With a flick of the muzzle, it locked into place with a snap. It was not the world's best balanced spear, but I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of it.
"No freaking way. That is awesome."
"I got the idea off of Czech CZ-52, but I improved it. It folds to the side out of the way of the grenade launcher. You don't hardly even know it's there until you need it. Bottom edge is good cutting steel. On the top edge is a silver inlay. You stick this in a lycanthrope and it's going to know it."
"Why did you paint it brown?"
I asked as I slowly turned the monstrous weapon over in my hands. It felt good. I realized I was grinning like an idiot. He shrugged.
I'm tired of black guns. Everybody has black guns. I wanted this to be a little different. Plus, black gets hot in the sun. I tried to give it a kind of desert tiger stripe thing. So do you like it?
Milo, this is the coolest gun I have ever seen in my life, and I've seen a lot of guns. How does it shoot?
Let's go find out. From what I've seen from you in practice, and from what Julie told me about your shooting on the freighter, I have been waiting for somebody worthy of Abomination.
Abomination? That was just too cool.
Milo handed me a sack of loaded magazines.
Okay, just one more question. Exactly how many gun laws does this break?
Milo's red eyebrows scrunched together in thought. He started to count on his fingers, and then thought better of it.
All of them.
The Abomination shot far better than I had expected it to. It was not sleek, it was not stylish, it could never be considered pretty, but it was reliable, and it was amazingly fast. The front heavy weight swung quickly, and the heft helped keep the barrel down as I poured shell after shell into the targets. The holosight was amazingly fast. At close range, you just put the target into the giant floating circle and pulled the trigger. I knocked down steel plates, I dusted clay pigeons out of the sky, and I put slugs into pie plate-sized targets at 100 yards with ease. The mag changes were so fast that I put my old reloading trick to shame. If I felt the need, I could keep the rate of fire high enough to melt the barrel off of the mutant shotgun from hell. I even got to run through a dozen flower-filled practice grenades and even a handful of high-explosive shells. Shove them in the front of the stubby launcher until they click, pull on the absurdly heavy trigger, and launch a blob of deadly high-explosive out to the end of the range. The explosions threw clouds of red Alabama clay high into the air. What's not to love about that? By the last grenade, I had figured out the approximate amount of holdover necessary to get hits out of 250 yards. Well, perhaps not hits, but like the old saying goes, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. By the time I had emptied all of the magazines, it had been dark for hours, and I was standing in a sea of spent plastic hulls. My clothing reeked of unburned powder, and the muscles in my face hurt from smiling. What can I say? I'm a gun nut.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool, I gushed. I have to have one of these. This thing is going to rock against undead.
Milo was obviously proud of his latest creation. I had no idea how much he was paid by MHI, but whatever it was, he certainly deserved more.
Go ahead and take it. It's yours.
For real?
I said, putting the warm gun over my shoulder.
Yeah, you get to be the beta tester. If any other hunters want one, I can build more. Personally, I'm going to stick with my carbine. Abomination is a little on the clunky side for me.
Thanks, dude.
Christmas had come early for Owen Z. Pitt.
You can consider it bribery. Remember what I was talking about earlier?
About that. He drew in close. I felt rather conspiratorial.
Look, here's the deal. After Julie's mom was lost on a mission, her dad kind of withdrew from the world. He spent all of his time down in the archives. He read and studied every book we had, and then he started gathering more from all over. It became his thing. You think Julie is smart? She gets that from Ray. He was probably the smartest hunter we have ever had. If anybody has heard of this cursed one, it would be him.
What happened to her dad? Why the falling out?
From all of his studying, he learned things that no human should have ever learned. It was stupid. Ray loved his wife and tried something desperate to get her back. It did not go according to plan.
So why doesn't Julie want to speak to him? And why does her grandfather and her uncle freak out at the mention of his name? Milo jumped about a foot off of the ground when he heard Julie speak.
"Because my dad is dangerous and insane."
We had not heard her approach. I stupidly removed my earplugs. I had shut down the amplification to avoid wasting the batteries. I found myself wishing that I had left them on.
"It didn't go according to plan?"
Julie snapped at Milo. She strode between us and stopped directly in front of him, arms folded. She was quite a bit taller than he was.
"Didn't go according to plan? Don't you think that's a bit of an understatement?"
"Well, I suppose that you could say..."
"According to plan? According to plan? Milo, all hell broke loose, literally. 97 hunters were killed, and it was only a miracle that we didn't suck all of Alabama into another dimension. Even then, the government shut us down and put all of us out of work. Monster attacks on innocent people went through the roof because we weren't around to stop them, and Dad is responsible for that, too."
Milo shrank a little in the face of the onslaught. She whirled and faced me.
"And you? What did I tell you before we left Georgia?"
"Stay out of your business," I answered, feeling like an idiot.
"Do I need to put that on flashcards? Do I need to have it branded on your forehead? I could have it put on backwards, that way you can read it in the mirror."
She was seething.
"Were you two going to try and get me to talk to Dad? What the hell were you thinking?" "Julie, listen. The bad guys want to destroy time. That sounds like a bad thing. We have 7 masters tromping around working as a gosh darn team, for heck's sake. And it has even scared the elves and the feds. If the bad guys get to the place of power and turn on their evil gizmo, we could be screwed. Ray can probably tell us where that's going to be,"
Milo asserted. "Yeah. What he said," was my addition to the argument. Julie gave me the evil eye.
"Owen, listen to me very carefully. You have no idea what level of trouble we are talking about here. The reason Milo thinks my dad is going to know where this evil place is because it is similar to the insane stunt that he pulled. He risked the lives of every living person for thousands of miles." "He did it for a good reason," Milo insisted. "He was crazy with grief. Your dad was desperate. He risked the lives of millions to try to bring back one single person who was already dead. That is the definition of insanity,"
she raged, grabbing Milo by the shoulders and shaking him violently.
"Don't you get that? My dad did evil things. He is one of the bad guys. If I had known just how far gone he was, I would have shot him myself. Ray did evil things, but he wasn't in his right mind. I'm not saying that we should let him out, just that you should talk to him, get information, prevent another big problem. If he could help us stop the cursed one, then it would be a way for him to make up for some of what he did,"
Milo shouted back.
"He is our best chance. We could still be screwing around in the archives when they set off their evil gizmo."
Julie dropped her hands and kicked some shotgun hulls angrily. Her face was drawn tight, and she was frowning. She tucked an errant strand of dark hair behind an ear.
"I know," she muttered. "And another thing!"
Milo started to yell, and then stopped abruptly.
"You know?"
"Yes, I know. That was why I was looking for you, you idiot. The situation has gotten worse. We just got word from Boone. He's been keeping tabs in Georgia. About 45 minutes ago, there was an attack on the home of another university professor. Strong vampires, at least a couple, right in the suburbs, just after sunset. They were looking for something. Unfortunately, the prof was throwing a party at the house at the time. The place is crawling with the Fed's reaction team, so Boone couldn't get a good look, but he was guessing at least 20 dead.
Let me guess. A colleague of Dr. Turley?
Yep. She was on our list to contact. A PhD in anthropology, religion specialist.
Smart vamps don't hit parties in the suburbs, Milo said. That brings too much heat and attention. Vamps feed on the outskirts. It doesn't make sense.
Unless the payoff is worth the risk, Julie said. My guess is they're looking for the when and where to use their artifact.
You think we're running out of time?
Why else would they risk having the feds track them? The Monster Control Bureau guys are not the most efficient bunch, but they have resources we can only dream about. Vampires, especially old ones, don't pull stunts like this. That's how they live to be old to begin with, she said with authority.
I don't think we're running out of time. I know it.
So who's the idiot now? Milo queried, somehow managing to look both smug and innocent at the same time.
Don't push it. Milo, tomorrow you cover for me. Grandpa and Earl can't know what I'm going to do. Pitt.
That was a good indicator that she was not happy. She almost never called me by my last name. Yes?
Try to dream something useful tonight, because tomorrow you're going to meet my dad.
Sounds like fun.
It won't be.
Chapter 13. Dreaming. Pleasant dreams, just the normal disjointed clearing of the human subconscious. I slept deeply, able to tune out Tripp's snores from the other bunk, and my only visions were good ones. Julie's beautiful smile and full auto assault shotguns. Then it changed. Events came into focus. My consciousness shifted gears. The pleasant, normal dreams evolved into something sharper, with seemingly real physical sensations. Cold snow under my bare feet, and the smell of smoke in the air. I was standing in the remains of a small town. The nearby buildings had been shelled into rubble. A light dusting of snow covered the broken stone, shattered wood, and rusting metal. There were a few signs and torn advertising on some of the crumbled walls. I did not recognize the language, but it seemed familiar. The style of the art was simple and old-fashioned. A gray winter sky loomed fat and heavy overhead. The world was totally and impossibly silent. The old man leaned against a piece of rubble, cane in hand. He took a pocket watch out of his homespun coat and examined it absently when he saw me.
"You're late, boy. Much work to do."
"Sorry."
"No. I the one that is sorry. Almost killed I got you last time."
"When the cursed one saw us on the beach?"
"Too dangerous to take your spirit out of body. I not know what I doing. I knew at this. Too, how you say, stupid to do again. But I had to show cursed one to you, so you know what I know. Too dangerous. No more out of body."
"What would have happened if he had caught us?"
"For me, probably stay same. For you, you end up like me. Something else probably come and take your body while it empty."
He shivered when he said that, drawing his collar up against the winter cold.
"Would be bad."
"Something would inhabit my body?"
"Yes, there are things that not have body alone. They are, how you say, jealous. We not leave your body again. Not safe. I have to find new way to show you things."
"So where are we right now?" I gestured at the silent town.
"In your head, boy. Where did think?"
"I don't know. I've never been here. I've never been to that field we met in before either."
"In your head, but from my memory. I am friend. I am guest here. I can show you things that I know. It's hard to show, but I getting better. For smart boy, you are sometimes dumb.
Hey now, I said defensively.
He laughed deeply.
It's fine. I forget. Real world is different where I am. Rules change. Come, I show you.
He pointed with his cane and walked away through the snow. I followed. The church had been old and battered even before most of its roof had been blown off by artillery. The stained glass windows had been shattered, and small parts of the walls were charred ash where the church had caught fire. It was obvious that it had been a simple but beautiful structure at one time.
What is this?
His church got blown up.
He made an explosion noise and opened his hands, pantomiming a bomb.
I not know name. I go to synagogue on self.
I can see that. I mean, what are you trying to show me?
His place of power. Cursed one brought ancient artifact here. Under this land was place where old kings make sacrifices. Before man, other things used this place. This is the last place that cursed one used to try to destroy time. Time is his enemy. Lucky for us, his learning was not right. He was not ready for such bold move. He failed.
We continued toward the building. The stone stairs were cold and slick with ice.
Lucky that time.
What would have happened if he had succeeded?
I ducked my head under a broken beam in the doorway. The interior of the church was just as damaged. Pews were smashed or knocked over. There was an altar at the far side of the room.
What does it mean to destroy time?
He not want to destroy. Cursed one thinks he can control. He has old device, older than the world. When matter was organized to create this world, the artifact was already there. Not meant for this world. It can torture time. Turn it backwards. Make it stop for some. Go for others. He's bad. Very bad. Cursed one is vain, full of pride. Nobody can control time. We'll destroy world.
The Elf Queen said that he's trying to get back his lost love.
Yes, that was first reason. Now, I think he is so much twisted with evil and hate, I not know. I will try to show you. If you understand him, maybe you can stop.
He reached up and put his cold, arthritic hands alongside my face.
I try to show. I not take you out of your body, but I can maybe show you cursed one's memories.
Wait, what is your name?
The vampire called you Barika.
Barika, he corrected. Not important who I am. Now shush. It's hard to show. Must concentrate.
Are you a ghost?
Ugh, quiet, boy. Time is short. Maybe he's ghost. I not know.
The old man squeezed my head. He wore an intense look of concentration.
What is this place?
He took one hand away and brought it back with a surprising slap. It stung.
Always with the questions. Respect your elders. Now shush!
The old man closed his eyes in concentration. The church and the smoldering town began to darken and fragment. Falling snow froze in midair. The world he had created began to fall apart without his attention. I could see my reflection in his glasses. As I watched, my face changed into someone else. Confusion, resolving itself into a hazy vision from long ago. The jungle road was hot. My horse was exhausted by the heat and lathered with foam. My plate was spattered with the blood of my enemies, and my helmet and plume sat heavy on my sweat-drenched brow.
The air was thick with smoke and the acrid smell of powder. I rested my battle axe across my saddle and passed my matchlock to my secondary to be reloaded. Large carrion birds circled overhead, eager to have their chance at the carnage on the jungle road. My men were following after the routed, scattering enemy, cutting down as many as possible. Worried about possible counterattacks, I signaled my northern mercenary captain to call the men back. When the undergrowth became thick, the advantages of our muskets and plate were negated. The big man spurred his horse forward, shouting for the men to rally at his position. I dismounted my steed as a prisoner was brought struggling before me. My men shoved him to his knees. The prisoner was obviously a man of some importance, adorned with gold jewelry and wearing complex armor made of hide, and crowned with a helmet constructed from a jaguar's skull. The prisoner babbled in his incoherent pagan language. I took my helmet off and waited patiently for Friar de Sousa. The priest came. As a man of many letters, he had made a study of the enemy's language and was able to communicate with them in a very rudimentary fashion. I waited as the priest and the pagan spoke in a mixture of words and hand signals. "He is a leader of his people. He says that a great ransom will be paid for his return," the priest said. Shots echoed through the jungle as my men happened upon a few other stragglers. "His city is wealthy, and the very streets are paved in gold." That was more like it, for gold was the very essence of this conquest. Legends of the natives' Dorado, their land of endless gold, were what kept my men focused. "Where is his city?" I asked. The priest translated. The prisoner pointed down the road and said something, holding up a pair of fingers. 2 days' march." "Excellent. Why take a ransom when you can take the whole city?" The priest understood and stepped away to avoid splattering his robes. I casually raised my axe and brought it swiftly down on my captive's head.
"No! Calm down, boy. It is not you. These are the cursed one's memories. You see world from his, how you say, perspective."
"But I just killed a man. I couldn't stop it."
"No. Cursed one killed him. Killed him 500 years ago. He's, I think you would say, mean son of bitch. We're just observing."
"How?"
"I am attached to him. Hard to explain. I have gone back too far in memory. Must go forward."
The jungle road faded away, only to be replaced with a city of giant stone buildings and massive pyramids. The city was wedged between jungle-covered peaks and surrounded by a swift river. Brilliant scarlet streamers hung above the roads, and trained jungle birds sang from cages hoisted over the intersections. The vision was jerky as the old man tried to control what I saw. If I was truly viewing the Cursed One's memories, that would explain why I somehow understood medieval Portuguese. It was a strange and unnatural sensation, to see through another person's eyes, to smell the odors of a city long since gone, to hear the voices of people dead for hundreds of years, even to feel the sensations through another's skin, like wearing an all-encompassing suit made out of human senses. It was perhaps the strangest thing I had ever experienced. And worst of all, I could hear his thoughts. Not truly hear them, but hear them as though they were my own. Only not under my control. The scene was slightly distorted. Less important details were fuzzy or incomplete, leaving gray patches on the otherwise brilliant landscape. Time moved quickly, only to drag to impossible slowness. Sounds were distorted,
Conversations of less interest were merely buzzes of background noise. Of course, memory is an imperfect recording device.
The occupants of the city lined the street. Almost all of them bowed in fear. I ordered my men to kill the few who did not bow as a warning to any who would dare challenge their new rulers. My small army had penetrated further into the interior of the continent than any previous conquistadors, and I intended to claim the riches of this city as my own. I led my men toward the central palace, lances up, muskets ready. Many of the people averted their eyes rather than see us in our armor and upon our horses. Bah! Primitives! The people of this city were right to be afraid. We had ground their entire army into the earth only a few hours before. I had lost 7 men and a few hundred native conscripts. They had lost over 1,000. Their army had been for ceremonial purposes, full of show and probably good at raiding small villages to take slaves and sacrifices. My army was made up of hardened warriors, good at nothing other than killing and looting. Isolation rather than strength of arms had been this city's real protection, but no longer. The priests were happy. We were going to send souls to the Lord, one way or the other. My men were content. There was more plunder, gold, and women than they could have ever imagined. It was only through fear and loyalty to me that I had kept them from immediately looting the city. My troops worshipped me, and an entire country feared me. It was a good day. I had a dream. Dare I say a vision? I saw myself riding forth at the head of a great army, conquering all of this land and making it my own. Returning home in glory. Not as a failed merchant, not as just one of the many sons of a nobleman, but rather returning home in my own glory and with my own riches. I ordered no messengers to be dispatched to the sea. This was going to be my bounty and mine alone. King Manuel would learn of this only when I was ready for him to learn. My troops marched toward the city center, where the largest palace loomed. I called a halt as we entered the central courtyard and had my men set up the cannon just in case a trap had been prepared, for surely not all of these backwards people could think that we were gods. The royal entourage met us in the courtyard. They were brilliant in their finery. A contingent of jaguar-helmeted guards surrounded the royal family. Scores of priests and priestesses, wives and concubines, scribes and courtiers filled the square. A man stood at their head. His skin coated in gold dust, his raiment a robe of brilliant feathers. Surely this was their king. He was frail and weak with age. The king approached, ahead of his personal bodyguard, and laid his staff upon the ground in front of my horse's shoes. His eyes were the sad eyes of a broken man. I summoned Friar de Sousa to translate.
"In the name of His Royal Highness, King Manuel the Great of Portugal, your kingdom has been conquered and must pay tribute. I am General João Silva de Machado. My word is law in this land. You will provide gold and treasure as I see fit. You will provide food, lodging, and clean women for my soldiers. You will provide able-bodied men to join my army in the continuing pacification of this land as I see fit. Your people will learn the true Catholic faith and receive the blessings therein. Failure to follow my orders will result in your death and the deaths of your people. Trickery will not be tolerated. For each of my men attacked by your people, I will kill 500 of yours. For any of my priests attacked by your people, I shall kill 500 of your priests. If any of you tries to harm my officers or me, I will raise this city to the ground until no 2 stones stand upon another." I will kill every man, woman, and child, feed your flesh to our hounds, and salt the earth so that nothing will ever grow upon this blighted land ever again.